Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man whose forthcoming book has already won the Nobel Prize for Literature, Andy Smerig.
Thank you, Mike, for having me. Yeah, it's great. I've won the Pulitzer as well. It's amazing.
Excellent.
Who needs to publish these things?
Wow. So what was your initial reaction when you heard this news?
Actually, it was, I shook my head and said, yeah, this is about right. I mean, of course. I mean, it kind of fits.
Well, I saw Bill Kristol's writing on this about how the Weekly Standard every week they have a parody usually, and then sometimes they run what they call not a parody.
Yep.
And he said, this is too easy. This is sort of the ultimate not a parody. Barack Obama wins the Nobel Peace Prize. My hope is that, you know, over the next few years, that something happens where we'll feel like, yeah, you know, he deserves the, I mean, I hope there's peace in the Middle East, for example.
I agree.
You know, greater nuclear security, peace throughout the world.
Yeah, but I agree. It was a parody of itself. If someone 2 weeks beforehand had said, oh, did you hear Barack Obama's going to win the Nobel Peace Prize? Everyone would have just guffawed and said, oh, come on.
Yeah.
But no, sometimes truth is better than fiction.
That's right. And sometimes truth will set you free, Andy.
Indeed.
Deep thoughts on the Education Gadfly Show. Well, we got a lot to cover today.
Can't wait.
Thanks for being here with us. We're going to play Rate That Reform. I'm sorry. That's what Mickey's going to do. Mickey is going to rate that reform. I'm a little rusty.
You are.
I've been out writing a book. I've frankly not been paying attention at all to what's happening in the world of education.
You know,
policy.
And I have to stagger the release of our books so we don't have to compete for the Pulitzer or the National Book Award.
That's true.
You can win 1 year, I'll win the next.
Yeah. All right, we'll work on that. All right, so we're going to play Part of the Gadfly. Then Amber's going to give us her research minute. Then Mickey's going to rate that reform. All packed in. So intern Janie, let's get started with Part of the Gadfly.
In his column last week, Paul Krugman said the following. Congress needs to undo the sins of February and approve another big round of aid to state governments. We don't have to call it a stimulus, but it would be a very effective way to create or save thousands of jobs. And it would, at the same time, be an investment in our future. Beyond that, we need to wake up and realize that one of the keys to our nation's historic success is now a wasting asset. Education made America great. Neglect of education can reverse the process. For a Nobel laureate economist, Krugman does come across as a little less than nuanced in his approach to education policy. But Andy and Mike, please give us an expert analysis.
First, one analysis is that question was way too long. which is not your fault, Janie. I know you did not write the question.
Mickey, we're looking in your direction.
But it's so easy just to copy and paste.
And second of all, here's a Nobel laureate. You know, he won the Nobel, but only after doing, you know, decades of work on economics.
International trade.
International trade. I mean, you know, it wasn't like he had written 9 months worth of op-eds and then gotten the Nobel.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say that. Okay, Andy, now to the... But is he right? Do we need to bail out the state government some more?
Okay, so the truth is this is just about the most simplistic argument you could make in the world of education policy. So he conflates two ideas, interestingly, in the same way that the Congress and the administration conflated two education ideas, thinking they're the same thing when in fact they're two different. So on the one hand, he says we need to bail out state governments, give them more money to save jobs. Actually, the stimulus has saved a bunch of jobs. But the second part of that argument is he uses a therefore, as in if you save jobs, therefore you're going to make education better. That is, investment in and of itself is going to make schools much better. We've tripled education spending since the 1970s after controlling for inflation, and results didn't turn out to be the way we wanted. So if you want to save jobs, that's one thing, but don't act like just by spending another $50 billion, our schools are going to get better.
All right, so we've been talking about this probably close to a year now, right? That we have this situation. We see that without this federal spending, many of our schools would have to cut their budgets. And in fact, in some states, it's happening even with the federal spending. In Ohio, for example, we spend a lot of time. And, you know, I've made the argument all along that, look, some of this pain can be good because it will force states to finally do things that are politically difficult but need to be done, like, you know, step back from some of their promises they've made to retiring teachers mm-hmm. that we just can't simply afford. Or figure out a way to let go of teachers that are not effective in the classroom rather than just getting rid of teachers based on seniority. And yet, here we are, and we see very few examples of states or districts willing to do that. I mean, D.C., you saw a little bit of that with the way Michelle Rhee let go of teachers, not just based on seniority. Of course, huge political firestorm. You know, in Ohio, it looks likely that there may be a 10% across-the-board cut from the state formula in education, that's going to probably put most of the state's charter schools out of business. It will be felt hardest by urban school districts. And the question is, at what point do we have to give up hope that states or districts would act rationally and find ways to save money that wouldn't hurt kids versus, let's just face it, if there's a cut to a state budget, they're going to do the politically easy thing and it's going to be bad for kids.
Someone should just have Dr. Krugman read three things: the GAO report, the AASA report, the school administrator's report, and then the Department of Education's own Inspector General's report that showed that all of this state stabilization money is only going to protecting jobs and preserving programs. None of it, so far as anyone can tell, is being used for reform or innovation.
I agree with that. But the point is, still, if you across the board cut all your teachers and suddenly you cut all your Teach for America teachers and charter schools mm-hmm. go out of the way and they just make these across the board decisions, those will be bad for some kids. I mean, we can't deny that. It doesn't have to be bad. They could make smarter decisions. They could focus on efficiency, but they're not doing it.
No, they're not.
Topic number two.
The Education Department is hosting another stakeholders meeting today to talk some more about the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. We touched on this last week, but there were very few think tanks, philanthropies, or reform-oriented organizations at the previous meeting, even though the forums are open to the public. Should such third-party organizations make a stronger effort to get in on the conversation, or are they already represented in the administration and its allies?
Much shorter question, Janie. I appreciate that.
I'm not writing them.
For the quality of the question. Just kidding. All right, well, I don't think this is a big problem. I mean, look, these stakeholder meetings, these are things that are totally designed to make the various Washington education interest groups feel good mm-hmm. about having a line of communication with the administration. It's smart. I have to admit, those of us in the Bush administration could have done this a lot better, better job of this than we did. I think we had an idea that these groups just wouldn't agree with this anyways, and so we didn't bother to talk to them, and that was a mistake. But does it matter if reformers are there or not? No. I mean, look, you got the key reform groups, like the Gates Foundation and all their grantees, have all kinds of back-channel communications with the administration, and that's the way the real business gets done. If they want more of those folks to come, then they need to make the stakeholders meeting more attractive, such as by serving steak. Now, that would motivate me to perhaps show up to one of these things.
Oh, my. Egad. Mike's exactly right on this. All the education reform groups I know have their friends in high places in the department, and it's not as though their voices aren't being heard. Actually, an interesting thing is that these meetings do more for the groups themselves than they do for the department, because all of the associations that are representative groups, they get to send newsletters back to their members all across America and say, on October 13th, I was at the Department of Education giving advice to the Secretary of Education on what they ought to do with the ESEA reauthorization. So, no one needs to lose any sleep over this if all of your education reform groups are getting their messages into the department.
Topic number three.
You'll like this one. It's nice and short. At his foundation's big conference last week, Jeb Bush said about President Obama, quote, "The fact of the matter is, the guy is on the right track, and his education secretary is as well. Agree or disagree?"
Well, he won a Nobel Prize. Of course he's on the right track.
Andy, keep coming back to that. Look, I, again, I'm torn on this. I mean, so I understand from the perspective of Governor Jeb Bush that he's looking here at a Democratic president, Secretary of Education, saying, hey, these guys talk a lot like I was talking when I was trying to reform the schools in Florida, and they're doing a lot of the same things, and I like their policies. And if we were talking about a Governor Obama or a Governor Duncan, I would agree wholeheartedly. But there's the federalism problem, right, Andy?
Mm. There is. I'm not going to cut the Obama administration complete slack. They've done a bunch of things that I disagree with. Two come directly to mind: their obsession on turnarounds, which I think is going to waste us a lot of money, and the mistreatment of the DC voucher program. So they haven't got it all right. They've moved in the right direction on a lot of things, but there are some big questions on this federalism question. For example, the thing that just strikes me the most is, on the one hand, Secretary Duncan continues to say that D.C. doesn't have all of the answers, that when he was superintendent of Chicago, he thought that was true. Now that he's in D.C., he knows that's true. But then with Race to the Top, as you and Rick have pointed out, what did you say? It's a carrot that looks like a stick or behaves mm-hmm. more like the stick. Washington, D.C. all of a sudden has all the answers. Here are 19 things that you're a state and you must do. Not some of them, not maybe do. You must do all 19 of them. So, on this question, it's a still big question mark. Does this administration believe that D.C. has all the answers or not? And Jeb Bush, I would actually think, would say no, D.C. doesn't have the answers.
Okay. Well said, Andy. That is all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. It is now time for us to hear Amber's Research Minute.
Welcome, Amber.
Thank you so much.
Amber.
How you doing?
So you're getting on a jet plane today.
On it. Hey, that could have been my song.
On a jet
just
plane.
Just did think about it.
And you're going to get a Colorado Rocky Mountain High in Colorado.
He's exceptionally happy today, isn't he? It's like
unprecedented.
Being away from here so much makes him, you know, giddy.
Wow.
I wasn't going to say it. Shout out to all my friends at the Mayorga Coffee Factory in Silver Spring.
Is that your hideaway?
That's my secret hideaway. That's right. So, Amber, what are we hearing about today?
All right. This week, we have a new interim case study report out from the Center on Reinventing Public Education that examines portfolio school districts in four big cities, New Orleans, New York, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. A portfolio school district, you ask? It means that the school district is not an operator of a uniform set of schools and services, but rather it manages a diverse portfolio of schools, each meant to serve a particular need. The writers posit that New York and New Orleans have implemented more of the elements of the portfolio approach than D.C. and Chicago. Still, all four districts are attempting to close low-performing schools and replace them with high-quality options for students. Each also has a plan for recruiting talent, which sometimes includes converting incumbents. Since school closings are not instantaneous, one of the most difficult challenges is figuring out how to shift funds as schools gradually shed students. The report also finds that New York and New Orleans are more amenable to per-pupil funding, while D.C. Chancellor Ree wants to spend more money on particular schools that she's trying to make over. Finally, portfolio districts are led for the most part by non-traditional leaders. Lots of in-depth information about the districts in this report. Most of it not surprising, but there are some remaining questions, one of which is, can independent school operators and providers be weaned off of their dependence on philanthropy?
So I have two things to say about this. Well, first of all, very good job.
Great
report. So the two things I want to say is this is the cutting edge. This is the most important stuff going on in, I think, all of education today, and certainly in urban education, that the way that we used to run traditional school systems, especially in inner cities, is going to be completely different 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years from now than it was before because of the portfolio model. So this report is telling us stuff that we want to know, and it's going to influence things. The second thing is big shout out to Paul Hill. He was writing stuff like this 15 years ago, and no one gives him, I think, the props he deserves on this, that he was on the cutting edge, he was predicting this, and he turned out to be right. So on this substance, this is true. There are these handful of cities that are doing it, and they're doing it in different ways. We have lots to learn from it. The only question is, when are the next tier of cities like Philadelphia and Baltimore and maybe Miami or hopefully Detroit with their new leader in there now, when are they going to start to adopt the same thing? But yeah, you heard it here, well, second after Paul Hill, that 20 years from now, I think every major urban school system is going to look more like this.
Wow. I'm just not quite as optimistic as Andy is on this one. I mean, I'm glad that when you said cutting edge, and I thought to myself, didn't Paul Hill write Reinventing Public Education in the late 1990s?
Yep.
That was cutting edge then.
Well, yes, it was a great idea, but in terms, I mean, to think that beginning, so I've been reading a lot about this, so Tayek's book, David Tayek, on the One Best System, largely since about 1890, 1900, we've managed urban school systems the exact same way. And the fact that chartering, no one really thought it was going to be the new way to deliver public education. The fact that it started off as this, you know, quaint little idea in Minnesota, but now it's an entirely new way of delivering a system, a new sector of education in inner cities. And it's no longer an idea. I mean, here in Washington, D.C., there are 80-plus campuses that are in the charter model. New York, they've started dozens and dozens of new schools. So what was once just a great idea could have just floundered, but it took root, and now it's changing education in America's cities.
Inspiring. That's beautifully said. All right, now I hope you're right. I hope this is...
You're skeptical?
I hope this is the answer. I just don't know if there is an answer out there. That's the answer. But my big beef is this. Portfolio schools, portfolio management, isn't that awfully jargony?
It sounds like what we ask teachers to do, doesn't it? Create a portfolio that we don't like. Anyway.
Yeah, or kids, like, at back to school time, they have to go get their school supplies, including a portfolio notebook or something.
Do you have some substitute? Do you have an idea what it would be better as?
I don't know. Why don't we have, like, just a not crappy schools movement? Now, see, that would be more straightforward.
Everybody calls everything, though.
I'm in favor of not crappy schools.
Thank you for giving attention to this report.
I thought it was a great report.
Shout out to
it's interim report. All right, so there's going to be many more to come.
All right, so what's the song that goes
along? The song, since we're talking about a new way of running schools,
or not.
Semi kind of new. We have New Sensation by NXS.
Itself a big hit back in the 80s and 90s.
That's right.
I guess really more 80s than 90s, is that right?
This would probably be, if I had to guess, I'd say 1989.
89, yeah, I think that's about right. Yep, late 80s. Around the time that the Berlin Wall fell.
Is that right?
Right, yeah, we're having the big 20th celebration right now. Yeah, October 11th.
Mickey, were you even born in 1989?
I most certainly was.
You were what, 2 years old?
I was
old?
A full 4 years old by then, but thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Do I really look like I'm 19?
This is the time of the show when we let some 20-something person tell us about some reform. So this is... woo!
So anyone who missed out on Mickey is filling in for Stafford, who can't be here this week.
Mickey, what are we rating today?
Okay. Over the weekend, the governator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, signed into law a bill that removes the so-called firewall between student achievement data and teachers, and specifically designed to help California qualify for the race to the top. Moreover, he is calling the state legislature back into a special session this fall to push the reform agenda even further and faster. In particular, he's looking to eliminate the state's charter cap and create more authority for turning around failing schools, also explicitly to qualify California for the race to the top. California joins the growing list of states that have significantly changed law in order to qualify for the race to the top, and by implementing these new policies that many reformers agree are both difficult and necessary. Getting the nation's most populous state on board is obviously a big win for the education department, and on that account, I'm giving the race to the top as a whole a solid B. And if the department can actually find some solid people to review these applications, I'm opening to giving them extra credit.
I wish the audience could see the skeptical look on both Mike's face and my face.
I wanted to generate some discussion here.
Well, I think you've done that, Mike. Do you want to go first?
Well, all right. First of all, this wasn't funny, Mickey. I mean, this segment is supposed to be mostly funny. This was a very, I mean, this was a key, you know, but that's the first point. Second point is this.
Well, yeah, I thought you were going to dive in on the policy.
No. second point is this. Okay, you are impressed. You hear this thing, Arnold Schwarzenegger in the race to the top. There's a firewall. I mean, this all sounds very exciting. When in fact, we're talking about whether or not you can use student achievement data to rate teachers' effectiveness for value-added measures as a part, one part of the small part of their evaluation system and blah, 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 blah. Yep. Andy?
Yeah, not so sexy. Well,
but it sounds sexy.
I mean, so I'm entirely less sanguine about the race to the top than you are. I was talking to a very smart person about this earlier on today. My bottom line is I actually am not encouraged when states are changing their laws just to get this federal money. As a matter of fact, I think that we should view that with skepticism just because, I mean, California has behaved poorly on their education policy for a long time. So just because they change things now because there's money on the table leads me to believe that, yes, they're going to try to get the money, but no, they're not going to implement them well. A smart man, I forget who it was, once wrote, Uncle Sam can force states to do things they don't want to, but he can't force them to do them well. So, yes, and of course that is Mike Petrilli who wrote that. The point is that these states are desperate for money and they're going to do all types of things to get this money, but once they put in these applications, all bets are off. They could use the money for just about anything.
Here's what I would say, Mickey, to be serious. Back to substance. In California now, it will no longer be prohibited for school districts to use student achievement data to evaluate teachers. Does not mean they will actually use student achievement data to evaluate teachers.
Correct.
And that policy change only cost us $4.35 billion.
With a B.
Billion.
Correct. I mean, there are plenty of states right now. The majority of states don't have, almost all states don't have a data firewall. But the amount of districts that actually take advantage of the lack of firewall, I mean, you can count on two hands probably.
Okay. Anything to say for yourself, Mickey?
Yeah, sure. I just, you know, I think that, you know, 5-10 years from now, people are going to be grateful that the state did remove that particular firewall and did, you know, raise their charter caps. If they do that, you know, it's a big step.
It's a step. We'll agree. Yeah. The size of the step is a question.
Right, thank you, Mickey. The audacity of hope will do. With your rate that reform. That's all the time we got today. Thanks for joining us. Till next time.
I'm Nobel Prize winner Andy Smerick.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net. Signing off.